Like notes to the hourglass, these are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brian Rose. I am an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Sarah Hennies, Thor Harris, Olato Negro, Claire Say, so many more, but this week I am so excited to have the one, the only Hayden Pettigo on the show. So he's got a new album, just came out. It is called I'll Be Waving As You Drive Away. And I love that title so much. Whenever it got announced, I kind of just obsessed over it a little bit. Anyway, and it's a beautiful title. It's a beautiful record, and it just feels Hayden's made so many great records and like this trilogy that he's had. And this feels like such a beautiful sort of, it's not so much an exclamation as just an exhale. Maybe, I don't know. I love this record so much. The more I listen to it, the kind of more it hits me. I feel like it has this ability to sort of just, it has like all these little tendrils and the different melodies and the atmospheres and just the, kind of the whole feeling of it that affect me more deeply. How about that? Each time I listen to it, it's like it just gets in a little further and a little further. And I can't recommend it enough. So it was great to have him on the show. This one was an absolute blast. Yeah, hope you enjoy it. My guest today is a guitarist, songwriter, composer, Hayden Pettigo. Woo!
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing great.
So you got a new record coming. I'll Be Waving As You Drive Away, which is, man, I love that title so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Thank you.
June 6th on Mexican Summer. Is there like a particular story behind the title?
Yeah. So I'll Be Waving As You Drive Away is the title to a 1978 episode of Little House on the Prairie. I watched that show a lot as a kid. I was a homeschooled kid in Texas. So I joked that you legally were required to watch that show to graduate high school if you were homeschooled in Texas. That episode is where I got the title from. It's super moving and emotional, and it stuck with me for years. And one day my wife was like, why don't you call an album that? And it was like the light bulb where I was like, oh my gosh, you're right. Like I need this title. And it made so much sense. It's the end of this trilogy of records. And it was just perfect.
It feels kind of different, like right away. And I think you said like, this is the cover. You're on the cover. This is the cover. Actually, it's you this time. I'm curious, like what's kind of changed?
Well, I mean, I think it was like multiple things. It's like the first cover, I'm wearing like black metal corpse paint. The second cover, I'm completely blue in front of a burning car. And there's something just extremely absurd and almost character-like about those. And I thought this whole trilogy is a story about my life over the years while making these records, everything I went through. And I thought a fitting ending would be to depict myself. There's no face paint, there's no burning cars, there's no anything. It's just it sounds kind of cliche, but it's just me. But weirdly, I think it's the most disturbing and absurd cover of the three album covers. There's something deeply strange about it that doesn't quite sit right with me, which I like. There's something just really strange about it.
Did you always know this was going to be a trilogy, or did it kind of sneak up on you?
It kind of snuck up on me because I wrote the first record in the trilogy called Letting Go. And that was the record that I sent to Mexican Summer and they ended up putting it out. I just made that record without a label or anything. My friend Andrew Weathers produced that one and we just made it with, I had no label in mind. And then it ended up on Mexican Summer. And then when it came time to do a follow-up, I was like, I'm going to use my friend Jonathan Phillips again for the album art. He's my friend that paints the covers. Mm-hmm. And the first record was Letting Go. The second one was called The Happiest Times I Ever Ignored. And between the cover art being the same, the titles felt connected. And also there was already this story going on because I wrote Letting Go when I lived in Lubbock, Texas. And then I wrote Happiest Times and it came out right as I was leaving Lubbock because my wife graduated from Texas Tech. We went back to Amarillo briefly. And then this new record, I wrote and recorded it and then immediately moved to Oklahoma. So it's like these three records have been documents of the past 5 years of my life. And without the lyrics, it's like people might not know the direct stories behind it, but it's literally, I can place all of these places and things that happen across these three records and they're all connected. And the story I was telling, it felt like a perfect place to end it.
Mm, yeah, that makes sense. I really like the description that you use, the microdose psychedelia and also maximalism, like these two kind of, they feel like in the same world, but kind of adjacent too. And I'm curious, and it's, I feel like it's also not something maybe people expect from a solo guitar record. Was there a certain sound you were kind of chasing or an idea that you were kind of going after with like thinking of those ideas?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a big piece of this puzzle is my friend Scott Hirsch, formerly of His Golden Messenger, an amazing solo artist, produced this record. And I knew from the start, I was a huge fan of his production work because he has this very like lowercase psychedelic sound. And I think a lot of that comes from his listening habits of like 70s dub music and tape echo and things like that. So I had this idea about the three records. I was like, I need to make one that's like my major maximalist statement. But also I've recorded the record in Ojai, California, where Scott lives. And I was really thinking about John Fahey's record, The Great San Bernardino Birthday Party. And that's widely considered to be Fahey's most psychedelic album because there's all these weird tape loops and it's really hazy. It's like a very, like people, like it's like when Fahey was drinking like rum and coke and everyone around was smoking like crazy amounts of weed, and you can hear it on the record. It just feels hazy, like you can't see the music. And my album's not as foggy as that, but I was pulling from that of like this maximalist microdose psychedelic solo guitar epic. So it was like in between that and Jim O'Rourke's Bad Timing, and then I was pulling in the Scott Walker thing, and there's even strings on it that remind me of Van Dyke Parks too.
And then you end the album with like your actual voice, which is, that was pretty, like an album full of instrumentals. I really love that. Was that, what made you kind of want to do that as sort of the final?
Well, it's funny. I came up with that ending because I don't know if people know this, but that spoken word thing at the end, it's not on streaming. It's not anywhere. It's literally just on the record unlisted. So if you put the record on, the idea was, is like you buy the record, you put it on while you're making dinner. And then afterwards you're washing dishes or something and you hear a voice from the living room and it would kind of startle you. Like, it's kind of like, it's weird. There's something like, it's like this gentle Mr. Rogers farewell, but there's something also spooky about it because Scott ran my voice through a tape echo. And it's just a little sludgy and hazy. And I think you don't expect to hear a voice, that there's something startling about it. Of at the end credits have rolled and it's like the director's face is right up at the camera. It's like, hey, I hope you liked my movie. There'd be something really strange about it. And that's probably the reason I didn't want it on streaming is, for one, I was like, I don't want to startle anyone on Spotify having that auto play out of nowhere. And two, I wanted it to be a special gift for those who bought the record. I was like, I want them to have this nice little surprise. And it's the perfect bookend to this trilogy is having my voice there to say thanks. Because I'm thanking the audience for listening to all three of them.
It definitely was funny. When I was listening to it, I think it must have been the first time I had it. I was working on a painting so I had it playing and it freaked me out a little bit because I was playing in the other room and it was exactly what you described. And it reminded me when I was a kid, we used to, whenever like we would have a sleepover, I remember pranking my friend by, you get like a 90-minute tape, record your voice, the end of the side, and then hit like play before you guys went to sleep. And so 40 minutes into going to sleep, it reminded me of that. And I really loved it. And it felt like this perfect kind of, yeah.
Well, also a weird reference, but something I remember as a kid is like my sister would, let's say, have a VHS of like the Swan Princess or something. And if you left the VHS on after the credits, they would have like a music video for a song that's in the movie. And there's something like disturbing about that. It's like, I don't know why there's something creepy about a music video hidden at the end of the VHS credits. Like there's not anything. Yeah, it shouldn't be there. Like this isn't a like a DVD bonus features isn't creepy, but a VHS tape ending music video is inherently creepy to me. So maybe it's a similar thing.
Well, this feels like a perfect segue then, because let's talk about all these songs that you put together here. And as always, I'm going to ask to start, what is the first song that you remember?
That was kind of a tough one for me to answer, but the one I listed, which it's like, I feel like I need to pull up the list because it's like, I wrote down the artist name because, I don't necessarily remember off the top of my head, the artist that wrote it's the song that ends the Disney movie. No, sorry. It's the song that opens the Disney animated movie, The Rescuers from 1977, I believe.
Yeah.
And it is a very, very spooky song. I'm getting the title right now. The song is The Journey by Shelby Flint from the Disney film The Rescuers. That's one of the first songs I remember hearing. A lot of that spookiness comes from the visuals of the opening credits of The Rescuers. Mm-hmm. There's something really off about that era of Disney. That's like their dark age. I think it's called the dark age of Disney. It was the late 70s, right. Mid to late 70s. But that song specifically is just, it's haunted. I remember hearing that young and not liking the feeling of it. Like there's something about that's like a lullaby, but it's not comforting. It's creepy.
Right. It is very creepy. I hadn't thought about this in a long time when I was listening to it. It felt very off-putting. And then thinking of it in the context of a Disney movie made it even more so.
It's beautiful, though.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's a really interesting, I don't remember The Rescuers very well. Like I think everybody has their Disney movies as a kid, like some of the American Tale, that's the one I remember. And Somewhere Out There was, I remember singing that song with my sister, but, the dark age of Disney is such a interesting concept.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what is a song that either makes you cry or makes you feel in that way?
So the one I chose for a song that makes me cry is it's kind of a specific one. It's Judy Sill, The Kiss. The one specifically that's interesting is that it's the performance she does on the Old Grey Whistle Test, I think 1972 or 73, where it's just her solo on the piano. Cause the album version has overdubs and strings. Her voice is multi-tracked and it's really beautiful. But the solo version, just incredibly heavy hitting. And every time I've heard that song, I've always felt like it's one of the few pieces of music I've heard where it doesn't feel like a song someone wrote. It feels like a song someone was given. And I don't mean given by another person. Like truly, I can't, it's hard to put into words.
It's a song that to me, it's always felt sacred. Like it's this sort of, like him that has existed out there across lifetimes and somehow was beamed into Judy Sill's consciousness or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's one of the most beautiful songs ever written. There's not much better than that.
No. Yeah. I think this is one of those ones you can make a case for the greatest song ever written. But
yes, agreed.
But we'll get into that in a few questions. okay, well, on the other side of things, what's a song that'll put you in a better mood?
So, song that would put me in a better mood. I did Laura by Girls. That's a specific one for me. I mean, the band Girls has a lot of deep, I don't know, it's a very sentimental band, and that album specifically. Yeah, it's a wonderful record. It's incredibly painful to listen to sometimes. I mean, Christopher Owens, he lived in Amarillo for a long time. He would have been living there when I was a kid. He moved there when he was like 17 and then left Amarillo to San Francisco and started Girls, which is super, super random. It's weird that he would have been like running around town when I was like a 6 year old. But that song Laura is just, it's such a fun, happy song that just, it never gets old. It's so classic, funny, sweet. I love the jangly guitar, mm-hmm. the vocals. It's just, perfect song. Just like 10 out of 10 catchy, great song.
Yeah. That jangly guitar sound is one of my favorite guitar sounds ever.
Yeah. And they did it so well because Chris played a Rickenbacker electric, and then live their lead guitarist played a Strat. And I don't know why those two guitars blended sound so good, but that Rickenbacker guitar sound is my favorite. Yeah, it's like those two guitars blend really well because they're different types of jangle. And the Rickenbacker was rhythm, and the Strat was lead, which is like such a good idea.
Man, I never even thought of that. And I feel like this is also, you know, we're getting into summer now. This is such a summer song to me. So it's hitting just right now. okay. Well, if it's not The Kiss, Hayden, what is the greatest song, objectively, the greatest song of all time?
So I knew that I would have at least 10 different, like, off the top of my head, I had 10 different options for that. But whenever I'm faced with something like that, I just go with what was the immediate first thing that came to my mind. And mine was On Your Own Again by Scott Walker from Scott 4. That's genuinely one of those pieces of music that, I remember for me when I was in high school, I would read about Scott Walker and I would read about his music. And I would be like, man, this sounds fantastic. And then I would put on his mm-hmm. music. And I would be confused because I would be like, oh, this doesn't make sense. This sounds like weird 60s soap opera, almost Tom Jones, Burt Bacharach kind of music. And I was like, why is the written description of his music not matching up with what it sounds like? And then I remember watching the documentary on Scott Walker. I was like 16 or 17. And there was a clip in the documentary where they played the part on Your Own Again where the drums and strings come in. It was like set to these psychedelic visuals, and I remember thinking, oh, that's what they're talking about, like that's that's why people say that's about Scott Walker. And then it all clicked from there. But to me, that moment when the drums and strings come in on Your Own Again is the single greatest moment in his entire discography. And I don't know anyone that wouldn't be moved by that moment if you were to play it for them on a good stereo. It's like we were talking about with the Judy Sill thing. It's like, yeah, that's the pinnacle of music. There's nothing beyond that. There's not much else you can convey in music. That's it. Knockout song.
I think that's really interesting how you're talking about reading about Scott Walker and then hearing Scott Walker was confusing, because that I had that same experience when I first listened to Scott Walker. And I've often realized, like, music that confuses things that confuse me, especially in music, are things that I'm really attracted to and get excited about, because I want to know why I'm so confused. And then, you know, you go down this rabbit hole, and with Scott, it's just the rabbit hole is the greatest place in the world.
Yes, absolutely.
this song, it's in a catalog full of some of the best songs ever written. Like, this stands at the top, and that's kind of frightening to think about.
Yeah, it's unreal.
I love all of Scott Walker. I love like the super weird late career stuff, like hitting sides of meat. But also like those first four records are so also perfect. Do you have a favorite Scott record? Can you pick one?
I mean, it used to pivot between 3 and 4. I mean, those were the two that any given day I would say 3 or 4. But I mean, honestly, what's funny is like on a run of dates recently, me and my wife had to drive down to a couple of Texas shows. And I'm going to butcher his name, but I decided to check out that Jacques Brel, that a lot of Scott 1 and 2 is covers of. And like Matilda and songs like that, listening to the original the Brel versions of the songs, I was like, wow, these are really intense. It was interesting. I was comparing them back and forth, and I like both. I mean, the Brel versions are just so intense and aggressive. They're far more aggressive than Scott's. But then would listen to the Scott Walker versions, and it made me now really like, I liked Scott 1 and 2, but made me kind of reassess how cool those records are. I mean, even not Scott 2. I think the best album cover is Scott 2. That's my favorite cover, is that black, white, and pink cover with the pink 2 on it. I don't know, like the listening to the version of Next on that record and then listening to the original Brel version. It's just cool. It's made me, the Brel versions have made me like reconnect with the Scott 1 and 2 records, just comparing them. It's super cool, like finally listening to those.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'll have to, I think I've heard the Brel version, like it's been a while, but I'm going to have to revisit that. You've got me curious. Okay. What's a song you used to love, but you heard it recently, or if you think about it now, it doesn't quite do it for you the same way.
So it's kind of a song and kind of an album, and it's not for any fault of the song or album, but it's like, I had to really think on this question, because at first I was trying to think of like, is it like something where like I hate the, like I don't like what the artist stands for now or something like that.
Right.
But I ended up going with Under the Pressure by the War on Drugs, because I remember that album came out and me and my wife had the CD of it. This was years ago. And we had like a 2004 Volvo station wagon with just a CD player in it. And that CD ended up getting stuck in the car. So for the entire time we owned it, for like a year or two after that, that was the only CD that could play. And me and my wife both ended up getting like so sick of that record. So that Under the Pressure song, the way the album opens with that echoed snare, that's like, like again, I feel like we have like minor like PTSD whenever we hear that cymbal thing of like, oh no, that Volvo, the CD was stuck in it. It was just, and it was like during hot summers and stuff when you're just like, I don't want to listen to the War on Drugs. I'm sorry. Right. I'm tired. Give me a break.
Oh man.
That's
brutal.
It was brutal, and it's not a bad album by any stretch, but it's like, I just thought it was a funny reason that to not listen to that album ever again. I probably can't.
I can only, I had an experience, I worked a retail job for 2 years. This was like a long time ago. And one of the songs that played on our store CD was In Your Eyes by Peter Gabriel. And I could not like listen to that song for years after that. Cause it was the same, and it's a great song. Like it's a amazing song, but anytime it came on, it was just, it was like PTSD. So I can only imagine where in your car that, oh God. Yeah. That would be very triggering, I imagine.
it was.
Okay. Well, what is a song that people hate? Whoever these people are, I don't know. Some group of people, they don't like it, but you don't care. You love it anyway.
This one, I chose a funny one. That's not, just another specific story. But I remember it was like 2017 or 18 in Amarillo. There was a biker bar place called Smokey Joe's on Route 66. And I don't remember why, but I was in there with some friends. Maybe for a show. I don't know what it was, but they had, you know, there's like two different brands of major jukeboxes, like Touch Tunes. And then there's another one, but there's one jukebox and bars that has like nearly all songs on streaming. And I don't know what this jukebox is, but I typed in Wolf Eyes and it pulled up their whole catalog. And I was like, wait, you can play Wolf Eyes on the jukebox? So I put like a dollar in it and I played Half Animal, Half Insane. I think that's the title. I'm gonna screw up the title. Wow. But I remember it made it less than a minute and an employee went out from behind the bar and unplugged the jukebox and plugged it back in to reset it. So we couldn't even get past a minute of it. But it was just me being annoying. But
that's incredible.
That bar hated that track, which, you know, I was, you know, so I was being annoying.
Yeah, but that's hilarious. I mean, hey, give someone access to everything that's streaming. You're kind of,
it's funny because, you know, I did numerous annoying things, more than one annoying thing around Wolf Eyes in Amarillo. I remember it's fine. My manager used to manage Wolf Eyes and this is like years later. I told him, I said, did you ever see the photo of the Wolf Eyes shirt on the Forever 21 dummy in a Forever 21 store? And he was like, yeah, I did. I was like, that was me. And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, in Amarillo, I went to a Forever 21 and I had a Wolf Eyes Dread shirt. And I told the ploy, I said, my uncle, he's in a band and he loves Forever 21. It would mean a lot to him if he could see it on the mannequin. And they put it on a mannequin and styled it. I took a photo of it and sent it to Wolfeyes, and they made a show poster with this Forever 21. It was in the store. It looked crazy, but it was really funny.
Dude, that's like the Insane Johnny meme account before it exists. Like,
yeah, it was like either right when that account started or right before. But yeah, it was funny.
That's awesome. Well, first of all, do you think of yourself as a romantic?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I would say so. But I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of like, I don't know, saying like I'm a romantic. To clarify, it's not like the rose in the mouth kind of thing. It's just like I feel like I, you know, romanticize everything. So it's like it's not just like the love romantic. It's like it goes far beyond that. And even my choice, because you're for the most romantic song, you can ask me. I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah. Well, what is the most romantic song?
The most romantic song I listed is kind of a weird one, but it's Walking on Air by King Crimson. This is a weird one because it's a 90s King Crimson track on an album that's not like, I don't know. I don't know many people that love this album or call it their favorite King Crimson album, but it's a beautiful song. It's like so gorgeous. It sounds very 90s. It's like a totally 90s song, but it's beautiful. It's one of their most underrated songs. It's romantic in the sense that it's like super sweet. It's like the sweetest song. But yeah, it's so underrated. Great track.
And I feel like all those, like, cause yeah, it is. It's very sweet. It's kind of, it's like really emotional. It feels almost weightless. And I feel like that is exacerbated by the fact that it's King Crimson, like a band that you'd never think of for doing those things. Just heightens your awareness of all that emotion in the song, which I think is great.
And it's fine too because the vocals are Adrian Belew, and it's fine because he can have like a really zany voice, but he has a couple songs with King Crimson where you're like, wow, this guy can sing. Like he's a great singer, and that's like one of his best vocal tracks.
Yeah, it's like, why are you keeping that hidden so much, buddy?
No joke.
Oh, I think that's a great pick. I love that. Okay, well, what is the song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
So this one is a funny one. It's a specific one, but the song There Better Be a Mirror Ball by the Arctic Monkeys. This is a funny one because I had never, like, I hadn't listened much to the Arctic Monkeys before, but when this song came out, this is like in 2020, it was like the lead single to this record. And it's like they had been moving in this weird slight avant-garde chamber pop direction that I don't think their fans liked. But I could be wrong, but I think they did that album AM, and it made so much money that they were like, we're just going to do whatever we want now, which I think is cool. I love the fact that they're making records their fans don't necessarily like. But this song is incredible. The strings specifically on this song are just unreal. And I remember when we were recording, me and Scott Hirsch were recording my new record, I was telling him about this song and he almost, you know, kind of laughed like, oh, the Arctic Monkeys. And I was like, oh, just put it on the studio monitors really quick. And we sat there in silence and listened to the whole song. He was like, man, that was incredible. And I was like, yeah, that song is nuts. And it's like the rest of the album is not. Personally, I don't think the rest of the record it comes from is very good because none of the songs sound like this song. But gosh, it sounds expensive. It's like one of the most expensive sounding songs I've ever heard where it's like, wow, this is a big money track.
Such a good description. Yes, it does. God, that's like the perfect. It does sound expensive.
Well, I think.
Yeah, it's got like a real drama to it. I don't know.
Well, the thing I noticed too is like most albums with strings, it's like one person overdubbing like seven like violin parts. This is one of those records where you're like, no, this is an orchestra in the room and you can hear the air in the room of like, this is not one person overdubbing strings. That's an orchestra.
Yeah. And there are not many like rock bands that can afford a orchestra these days.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
As someone who makes mostly instrumental records, are lyrics a big thing to you? Like, do you pay attention to lyrics? Can they ruin a song, make a song?
Yes. Yeah. I definitely do pay attention to lyrics. I don't have it in my music, but I am. Yeah. I can be picky about lyrics.
So, okay. So what are your favorite lyrics? Whether it's a line, whole song.
That one was a tough one because I went through so many different options on that. But I was thinking about, it's the same lyrics, but I was listening to the demo version of Paul Simon's Slip, Slide, and Away. Because on the deluxe version album, there's a demo version that's just him on the acoustic guitar. And I think it's one of the best songs Paul Simon ever wrote. And we're talking about a guy that I think is one of the best lyric writers of all time. He does not fully get the credit he should. Right. I think he's just so understated that people like really underestimate how good he is. But do you want me to read the lyrics? Like, do you want me to recite the specific part?
Is there like a specific like line or stanza or whatever, however you want to qualify it.
Yeah. So in Slip, Slide, and Away, it's like a few different character studies of all of these people in like rough spots in life. But the one line he says, I know a father who had a son. He wanted to tell him all the reasons for the things he'd done. He came a long way just to explain. He kissed his boys. He lay sleeping. Then he turned around and headed home again. I was like, not many people can cover that much ground in that short of time. Like, it's just, he tells you everything where it's like, no, you didn't need to oversing that or write more. He said everything. Right. That's it.
Yeah. God, that is, what a Jesus.
Master, like the true master.
Yeah. I think this song is so good. Like in that demo version you talk about, I think like I've always known how I've always loved this song, but I remember hearing the demo version and it kind of really hammered home just what an incredible song it is.
Yeah. Like, it's unreal. And I love his style. Like, he doesn't overdo it. He always just keeps it so minimal. He's literally as good as any songwriter there's ever been. Like, no, there's no way anyone's better than that.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in rarefied air. What song have you or can you listen to the most?
The one I listed was, it's called Guitar Piece by Gia Margaret. That song, it's weird. It's such a short, little song off of her last record. It's only like, well over 2 minutes. It's just a nylon string guitar, but it's weird. I did this Zoom thing recently where I was a speaker on this like Zoom class on open tunings, and I said this piece by Gia is like a perfect example of an instrumental guitar piece, and it's because it has everything I want from an instrumental guitar piece. It's moving, it's eerie, it's beautiful, and I mean, I have to be specific on when I listen to it because it gets me in a certain mood. It just like, I get super nostalgic, but it's like a dark nostalgia. It's like, to me, the best way I describe it is whenever I've heard the song, it feels like having an out of body experience where you see yourself as a 17-year-old or like you in a different form of life where you wish you could like be that again or like, but you can't. Mm-hmm. You're just viewing it from the outside. And that song just captures that feeling so perfectly of just, oh, it's haunting. But yeah, I could listen to that. There was one day Mix and Summer had me signing these photos with this new record. I had to sign 750 photos of myself. Oh my God. It was a huge stack. Like, it took multiple hours to do. But I remember I put on that Gia Margaret song on loop. I listened to it for hours on loop, signing all these pictures. Wow. It never gets old. I've listened to it hundreds upon hundreds of times.
I can see. Yeah, it's one of those songs, like, there's this softness to it, but it kind of not masks, but somehow heightens the weight underneath it all. Like, oh God, it's just, I don't know. She does so much with so little.
I know. And I my theory is, I think the reason it sounds as this perfect offness to it, like I say offness in the best way, but I think it sounds like she's tuned. It sounds like she's tuned low on a nylon string guitar. And like the strings are barely able to stay in tune. Cause nylon strings don't tune down very well. So it sounds like it's always on the verge of being dissonant. So it's just like wobbling, but it never goes out of tune. That's the beauty, is like she keeps it in tune. So that's where that it's that perfect offness of that's something's really wrong.
Yes. Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, that's, you described it exactly. It feels like, I mean, yeah, it feels like it could just fall apart at any second, but it never does. And then, yeah, beautiful song. What is the last song you completely fell in love with?
Last song I completely fell in love with, I would say the song Daylight Dreaming by Andy Schaaf. It was on his last record called Norm. And I will say this right here, right now, Norm by Andy Schaaf is the greatest record of the past 10 years. Easily.
Wow.
Easily. That record, I'm furious about. Like, it didn't, I want to be careful. I say this. It did not get the praise it deserved. And it should have been viewed as like this modern day masterpiece. It's like jaw dropping. That record is, it blows me away. Blows me away.
I am ostensibly the music press, and this completely missed me. Like, this was my first introduction to this. Listen to this song, kind of sat there with my mouth wide open, and then like listened to the record last night. Yeah. Blew my mind.
It's unreal.
It's ridiculous. I
mean, and that record's, what's weird is Andy's such a nice guy and his music's so sweet and tender. And that record's genuinely creepy. That the first time I heard that record, I recommend if anyone listens to it, go read the backstory of the concept album. It's a concept record. And the story is really, really unsettling. And man, this album stayed with me for weeks. And what was funny is I found this record, listened to it for 2 months nonstop, and then I ended up getting an offer to open for him. And then I went on tour with him as his opener and heard him play the songs every night solo. And it was the greatest tour. I watched every night, just like, this is awesome.
How is this my life?
It was so great. Yeah. But if anyone hasn't heard Norm by Andy Schaaf, listen to the whole thing. Greatest record of the past 10 years. I put my name on that. I'll put my name on that.
I can't wait to like dig into it more, because it just, I just sat there. I don't know how it completely passed me by, but I guess I wasn't the only one, and that's a damn shame. But that's a whole other thing. Okay. Last two questions, two big questions. What is the song that means the most to you? And not necessarily because of the song itself, but you associate it with something, someone, an experience, a moment.
For me, I chose Sligo River Blues by John Fahey. That one, again, it's a song that's tough to put into words because it's touching on something that's just beyond my understanding. I don't know. There's something about that song that's just so perfect, sweet, similar to the Gia Margaret thing. It's sweet, but it's really off. There's something about it that's just... And it's weird because I remember the first time I heard it thinking, like, what tuning is he in? And it's in standard tuning. It's G chord, C chord, D chord. That's it.
Really? I was
like, why does it sound like that? He's just playing normal chords. And it's just like, but it, you can't replicate it. It's just like, there's something that's just like a melancholiness to it that isn't in those chords. There's not a melancholy in a C chord. Or a G or a D. There's not in those chords, but Fahey did that somehow.
Wow. I had no idea that was... Okay. You kind of just broke my brain a little bit, but...
And I might have gotten wrong. I think it's G, C, and F. It might be a G, C, and F, but it's just three most...
Either way, right.
Beginner guitar chords.
Three chords.
Beginner guitar chords. Like the first chords you ever learn. And he tells this story that it's why Fahey is like, it's, there's some people that are like originators where it's just like, oh yeah, like they're an originator, but they're not the best at it. Like, yeah, he paved the way, but it's just like, he's the originator of that like specific sound. But it's like, he's also like the people that copied Fahey afterwards. No one has ever written a Sligo River Blues. Ever. Like, that's the only one that will ever do that. And it's, he wrote that in like 19, and it came out in like 59, which is insane.
That's completely bananas. Wow. I'm just, it kind of explains it, like, because the song is always, there's always been this like mystery to it or something to me. And now, like, hearing it's like, oh yeah, it's three of these beginner chords, but it, you would never, yeah, it all. Okay. My head is swimming here. All right. Last question. What's your favorite song?
Oh, man. So again, it's like I had 10 different options immediately.
Sure.
But I always go for the first thing that comes to my mind because there's 10 correct answers to this. But it went with Carpet Crawlers by Genesis, just because Genesis, probably the most foundational music for me above Fahey, because I mean, they were my love of prog era Genesis was before my love of Fahey, and The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway was just a record that deeply moved me and disturbed me when I first found it. And gosh, the Carpet Crawlers is a gorgeous song. I highly recommend people go on YouTube and look up Carpet Crawlers piano tutorial or cover. And the reason why is Tony Banks, Anthony Banks of Genesis, the piano part of that song is really strange. Even the way he moves his hands, it's like this hand pattern where he's like moving one hand in this weird pattern in one spot, and then his other hand is just bouncing over his hand back and forth. And I've never seen anyone play piano quite like it. And he's using what on that record, I think it's called an RMI electric piano. It's either EMI or RMI electric piano. And that's the same weird, like it was a not an electric piano like a Rhodes or a Wurlitzer. It was like this transistor like keyboard that like Sparks used it. Like the Spark sound is that RMI electric piano.
Yeah.
Dr. John's early 70s records, like Right Place, Wrong Time, that's an RMI electric piano. But it's like that's what they used on all of The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. So there's this weird tone. That keyboard again sounds off. And there's an interview of Sparks where they were talking about that exact keyboard, where they were like, it was the worst keyboard of all time. It sounded terrible, but we couldn't travel with the Rhodes. And we realized if we ran it through an Echoplex, it sounded kind of cool. But it's like Tony Banks and Genesis made that electric piano sound like the greatest keyboard ever recorded. Yeah. And it's actually this wonky thing. And it also leads to the fact of like, the Mellotron, the electric piano, the thing that is interesting about those is the Mellotron was trying to sound like strings and failed. And that's what's cool about it. I know there's an Eno quote about this, about people love a format later because of its shortcomings. And that RMI electric piano was trying to sound like a piano and fails at it. It sounds nothing like a piano. It sounds like a weird fairy honky tonk, like a weird fantasy honky tonk piano or something. It's just wrong. It's just sounds ridiculous. But on Carpet Crawlers, it's just like the second I hear that, it's like, wow, that is the coolest sounding thing I've ever heard. But yeah, great. My favorite song of all time.
It's a great song. This one of my favorite things about doing this podcast is over the last year and a half is it's given me like a whole new appreciation for Genesis that I didn't have. And you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Well, awesome. We got through. This is a lot of fun. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Awesome.
I'll be waving as you drive away. Is out on June 6th on Mexican Summer. Do you got any shows or anything coming up you want to mention?
Yeah, I have a ton. I have an album release show in New York on like June. It's like sold out. It's sold out, so I can't sell tickets, but it's like on June 10th or 11th. And then playing an LA album release show on June 13th at Permit Records Roadhouse. There's still tickets to that. And then full European tour August and October. And I'm about to announce a giant US tour as well. So I'm going to be touring all year.
All right. You're going to be very busy.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much. Once again, thank you. Thank you. Thank you to Hayden Pettigo. Check out all his picks, link in the show notes. And of course, pick up a copy of I'll Be Waving As You Drive Away, which is out now in Mexican Summer. Amazing record. Amazing record. And go see him on tour because he's going to be on the road a lot. A lot. Yeah. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to this podcast. It really helps. You can also pledge a little extra support by going to patreon.com/foxydigitals for as little as $3 a month. You get these episodes a little bit early, and you get, they're longer too, because there's a whole other section that I cut out for the main feed. And seriously, thank you to everybody who has signed up. That ongoing support means everything. But hey, if that's not for you, take that as a few bucks and pick up a copy of Hayden's record. Until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.